Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests for both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization Toward the Light on this radio program, please visit our websites towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Well, this week I am very pleased to have the author of a brilliant, and I do mean quite brilliant, book entitled The Holographic Canvas. And what's really auspicious about this is that I've been talking about so much lately how indeed this realm that we perceive as reality is actually a hologram. And in fact, I open most of my talks saying that very thing. And this guest is also a host on BBS Radio, and I want to welcome to Toward the Light. Thank you so much, Sonia Barrett. Welcome, Sonia, to Toward the Light.
Thank you so much, Juliet, for having me on the show. I am very honored to be here.
Well, it's lovely just to have you, and your program is called The Sovereign Mind. And,
right, correct.
And feel free to share with our audience what time you're on the air.
Well, I'm on the air on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And so, yeah, from 9 to 10. 9 a.m. to 10 a.m.
That's
Wednesdays.
That's excellent. And I really, when I was telling you just a few moments ago, I was really, really appreciating reading your book because it feels like it's reading my own words, quite literally, and I'm so excited about this. I'm like a child, very giddy and excited about it. I would like to ask you, it looks like that we've got a lot in common, whereas you've been you've been very aware of connection with Source since childhood. You're originally from Jamaica and then came to America at the age of 13. Tell me about some of your experiences as a child, and if you had special experiences that you'd like to share with us to start off with.
Well, let's see. I can't say I have, the traditional paranormal experiences in that sense. But what I do know is that there is always a curiosity and an awareness of something more than what I was being taught, because I went to church. I grew up in the church and loved going to Sunday school. I mean, I just loved all of it. It was just exciting and fascinating to me, and I was good at going to finding the scripture really quickly and all of that stuff. But yet, with all of that, there remained that question for me: who is God? Who is it that I have been hearing about since as far back as I can remember? And what I was hearing just was never clearly answering those questions for me. But yet, I felt this connection. I've always felt very connected to something much more expansive than than the physical life I was living, or in my body. So there was always a sense of feeling very foreign here, but not out of place, not as if I was a misfit or I had a difficult time with it. I felt like I was from somewhere else and I was exploring.
Yes.
I was just sort of hanging out, checking everything out. But more from, it was more, I think, a fun thing in a way for me. It was like a child going to Disneyland, because everything was just different. Just how everybody did everything was just just unusual to me. So that's the only thing that I can say, and that stayed with me. I mean, that just stayed with me up until this day. So that would be my biggest experience, but not necessarily anything in particular of having visitations or anything like that. I had one situation where that I can remember. I was in my parents' room, and I remember sleeping in there. And I woke up and I looked up. There was a presence that came in the room, but the presence was very much that of, it looked like my aunt walking into my room. And I remember just sitting there watching. And it was a woman, and she walked in and she put a white, looked like a piece of paper folded, right between where my mother and father, and then she walked out of the room, but she never really turned around to look at me. She just walked out, but I thought it was my aunt. And the next morning, I could have been maybe six or so. I remember the next morning I asked, because my aunt lived with us, and she had not been anywhere near that room. And I think that was probably one of the most interesting things. I was not scared, but it was very, very much like, it was very real. So that was probably my biggest paranormal experience as a child. The rest of it was just connection.
I think these two things that you mentioned are really important in a lot of ways, because I wanted to say that there are a number of children who are aware of this expansive presence around them, and that they're not alone. Then somehow in time it might be, they're conditioned into interpreting what that experience is, and also, or even into denying that it ever existed or what have you.
Right.
So if, you know, children are so brilliantly aware, and I think it's beautiful when, you know, people like yourself and myself have stuck with this. We've not allowed ourselves, in spite of being misunderstood or what have you, to go into denial about this awareness or these experiences. And
then
these other experiences, like you seeing your aunt, is almost in a way like icing on the cake. You
right.
know, and it's something that is so natural indeed and second nature.
Mm-hmm.
There would have been no reason to be afraid.
Right,
and
it was
so
not,
you,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And
yes,
I
absolutely.
Think it's really a good point, too, because then, you know, as people are being brainwashed and mind-controlled, as I call it, out of acknowledging this connection and these experiences and what have you, then it all, then people start to create a stigma out of it and demonize it and what have you, then... You know, it's very, very traumatic for a child to be talked out of this, as it were.
Right, absolutely.
To be ridiculed.
Absolutely. Now, I know with my children, however, my older son, now he had a tendency to see a lot more things. I mean, and he still, it's not as intense as it was, but as a child, he did. I mean, he would get all kinds of visits. But he wasn't afraid. He would, you know, tell me the next morning. I mean, this went on more intensely, I think, through his teenage years. There was one incident for him, however, which that was very, very interesting. This wasn't a really great feeling, though, I would say, for him, this particular incident. And I won't go into it, but I would say, though, that he woke up with his finger cut. Where he was there. Wherever it was, he was gone. And, but my kids still yet though were never afraid of any of whatever the process would be or whatever their experiences would end up being. There was something they knew and they understood. So they knew that no matter what, there was a sense of safety and security, always in being able to return, get back, or whatever the case may be from any seeming dream state, because they, you know, some were dreams, but not really dreams. You know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that. You're addressing that in chapter two as well. And I thought, oh, blimey, this reminds me of a poem I wrote. And so we're going to have to get back to this because I do want to ask you what it was that brought about the writing of this book. But I think it's really special that you've had this connection and you've been aware of it, and then you've encouraged it with your own children as well. I think that's really, really important.
Yes, absolutely. For me, again, the curiosity began from birth, and I'm sure I came in with a knowing, I think, a knowingness then that I would, try to scratch more than scratch the surface. I mean, that is my sense, is that I just came in and this is part of what I was going to do. So that there has always been that knowing. So I didn't feel like it was something unusual for me to do at all. However, my curiosity ran through my teenage years, and for me, it would be things like the Bermuda Triangle, Edgar Casey. You're sort of getting your feet wet in these kinds of things. George Orwell's book, was it 1984? Yeah, all of those things were sort of the triggering for me. Now, as a teenager, I started to acquire or get information that was coming in. I can't say specifically now because it was a little while ago, but I had information coming in, and I think then, yes, it was so overwhelming to me at that point that I did stop. I backed up off of getting that. And I think that obviously that is something that was supposed to occur at that point, because I needed to go ahead and have this particular life that I ended up having, which is to marry, which is to have my children, which is to go through that particular process. And then there would come a point again where it was time to pick it up, but I had to complete this, whatever these agreements were with, my husband and these children at that particular time. So it was after I got divorced at 32 that that led me into the curiosity. It was a very difficult time. I went through a very difficult marriage, very, very, very difficult marriage. And I needed, and it's the only way that I can always explain it, for me, it was about needing something else, needing to hold on to something else, needing to find something that was going to be greater than what another human being could give to me or present to me or promise to me. And so that was really where this began. And I always give the story that I didn't know how to meditate. Well, coming from the church background, it was about praying. We didn't really hear anything about meditating per se.
So were you in a Christian church?
Yes.
I would imagine some sort of Christian church.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
So then I had to, on my own, I learned how to meditate. I sort of wandered up on the process of meditating after trying and trying and trying. Anyway, to cut a long story short, that initiated my entering through this amazing door of information, this whole other side that I realized was now accessible to me. And it would take me some, over a period of time to develop a trust in what I was now acquiring, because this was coming from me. I wasn't, I always make that clear. I wasn't channeling, and as people, the traditional sense, there was no third party channeling, because my request and my desire was to be able to know, just because I know that I could, because I knew that everything held the knowledge and the information of everything, because everything was everything. So innately I had the sense, so I just knew. So then that part of myself opened up, and of course that is, of course, your when you become more, because you're never disconnected really from source, you just
exactly
forget.
Exactly.
Mm. So I came into a memory of that, and I started to grow in my remembering, is how I like to put it. I started
that's
to grow.
Perfect,
yes. And so that's sort of what happened, and I didn't intend to write a book. I simply was writing information as I was getting it, and a lot of it I didn't even understand because I didn't understand. I didn't know physics. I didn't even know what I was writing was physics or quantum physics. I just had no knowledge of any of that. So it just sort of happened that way, and over time I started to really trust all of this, and I got stronger at it. And over time I realized that I had information where I could actually write a book. So that's sort of how it happened, and it took me 10 years to write it because some of what I wrote in the very beginning completely got changed because I was so new. And then as I would evolve with all of this information, new information would come in to the point where there was information that was going to be sort of a more consistent across the board that would just continue to expand in terms of, an awareness. Because truth is forever expanding. So that's exactly. That's really how it happened, how the book came about, and eventually they put it all together, and I started to write more because now I realized I was writing a book, and that's how it came about.
Well, that is so beautiful too, and the fact that this is just a process of unfolding and things evolving, coming through you, and then we're just being able to share them actually when the time was right for this to come out. And it's an interesting point too about the fact that we're constantly exploring and researching and discovering and being on this plane is really indeed like being in a cosmic laboratory, as it were. It's a constant process of discovery and adventure. And we need to not lose sight of the fact that indeed it is an adventure.
Yes.
And as we are finding things out, because this has indeed been the case for me as well, and it's been a lifelong process. I'll get information and write about it, and then going down the pike a little bit, some things will change because it becomes more clear. And
absolutely,
yes. And what I've really been appreciating as I've been reading your book is that what you're saying is so exactly what I have experienced on the other side. Not only during my near-death episodes, but also just the way I am popping out of the body quite a bit anyway, mm-hmm. and always being interdimensional.
Right.
And yet needing something, and this is a misnomer, if ever there was one, quote, more tangible, when actually this plane and that... I'm so excited about this. This plane is a hologram. This is what you're stating in the book, and I thought, oh, blimey, because again, this is what I have,
mm-hmm.
Opened every talk that I'm given with that very statement, is that this plane is a hologram.
Right.
It was a direct experience, and also being told this whilst on the other side.
Mm.
And I love the way people like yourself and our friend David Icke and others, we've all simultaneously come to this
conclusion.
Yes, and yet independently of one another, and then
right.
also being able to validate one another, because it is monumental. It's very, very
right.
Special, and it's very important in this time right now that.
Mm-hmm.
That people really start to understand our true heritage, our true divinity,
mm-hmm.
and this sort of thing. So, if you don't mind me asking you about how old were you, it was after your divorce, obviously,
right.
that you just suddenly were catapulted into this book really coming into place for you.
Right, absolutely. And again, my circumstances. In the marriage, which I can say because I've said that on other shows, I was in an abusive marriage, a physically and emotionally abusive marriage, and it was a very, very intense experience for 14 years, and just not knowing how to get out of it because I was, you know, terrified. You know, you have somebody threatening that they will find you no matter where you go. And they kind of grab your mind. And so because of that, I completely understand, women who have been in abusive circumstances, and I see how the mind is, you know, you're brainwashed into believing that this person has that much power. For me, it was a beautiful, education, and I know a lot of people would say, how can you say that? Well, because of where I am in my understanding now, I understand the process, and my ex-husband, who has just turned out to be, just amazing in the sense of his own, growth, and he's read the book 3 times, and, he just, you know, and so I say to people, I said, man, you just don't understand. You know, we hold a door open for each other. We hold a script for each other. And, we have to understand that when we can really get that everybody gets a script, and when you start to make, there's certain changes, you can change it at any given time you want to, but first you have to understand that. And for me, the process made me so strong because I know that this journey, if you are indeed saying that you really want to dig in and really want to remember, it does take strength. I'm not going to say that it's a cakewalk because it's not. And you have to really be willing to go that extra mile in saying that I want to know and realize there's a lot that you're going to end up letting go of because as you acquire more knowledge, your life changes. You know, things
absolutely.
Fall away. All the old programs fall away.
Yes.
So for me, and so to see my ex-husband go through this beautiful spiritual transformation and said to me, if you ever have to say it to tell anybody, you know, what you went through with me, please do that because that is, you know, the least that I can do in terms of what you had gone through and to see this book come about. And to me, I just thought that was just wonderful. So he's gone through his own transformation because I shifted. When I shifted and I was holding on to him and what he did and it wasn't about him and I was able to move forward, I also allowed him to move forward as well. He had the choice of whether he wanted to continue to be who he was or he moved forward. So that's the connection that I think people have to understand that we hold it with each other when you can't move forward and you just keep, you know, holding on and blaming.
Yes.
Being able to see the process, it allows everybody to step up if they so choose.
Well, it was a tremendous gift, and I know, too, this is a really important reminder that our worst nightmares in life actually are tremendous gifts to us, and they teach us courage, and they teach us to overcome fear. And it was so interesting when you were talking about, he's threatening you, no matter where you go, I'll find you. And I thought, oh, what a tremendous metaphor for, even what's going on with this imposed one, new world order, and Big Brother, no matter, remember, even in your sleep, Big Brother's watching you. And just, infusing this fear everywhere. And the whole idea is to rise above that fear and to realize is that love is everywhere and that is the guiding force and that is the real truth of who we are. And how beautiful that you and, your ex-husband as souls were able to experience such tremendous growth and healing and you're still friends. You're still this family. Mm-hmm. In some
way. Oh yeah. We get along.
And how
very
precious
well.
Is that?
Mm-hmm. He's a beautiful person. I mean, just an amazingly beautiful, person, which that part of him was always there, but, you know, two personalities, but he was able to come home to himself in owning what his actions were, what he had been, and then, of course, what he can be. And so I think that's with all of us. If, you know, we have to own who we are, own everything about ourselves, cannot blame and, you know, and beat ourselves up, but it's just owning it and going, okay, this is what I've been, and this, okay, what have I gotten from this? I'm ready to move to a next level, to a new level. That game is old.
Yes, exactly. And it's whenever something happens to me that is unpleasant, I will always seek what the message is in it, rather than feeling sorry for myself or blaming anyone or what have you. I always say, all right, what is the message in this? Because
yes.
I know there is one. And I know it's a gift as well. And mm-hmm. this is a very... And my daughter and I were talking about this just earlier today. She's visiting me, and it's so lovely. And we were talking about, you know, especially males, bless them, how they're emotionally suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And we were even acknowledging the fact that, you know, in the society, because of that, that is what leads to such violent behavior and what have you.
That's interesting that you said that, because that's exactly... What's the conclusion he came to, my ex-husband?
Mm.
That's what he came to. And he finally said he was surrendering and allowing himself to be the gentle being that he was. And he didn't. And that's really what the bottom line was. That's what he said. So I thought that's really interesting what you said, but that's true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's how we define masculinity. It's how we define femininity. It's all these programs of definition.
Well, exactly.
That,
yeah,
it's forced on our children, and it creates all these emotional problems.
Another, you know, and then indeed taking it a step further, you know, and that's why I'm so excited about your book, because you're really speaking about this a lot here. You know, we've lost sense of our own divinity and feeling separate and feeling small when nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, somehow having so many of these experiences, and even just a few days ago, I can just be taking a walk now or sitting listening to music or playing the piano or what have you, and all of a sudden this tremendous peace comes over me, and I feel total oneness with all.
Mm.
There's no sense whatsoever of being separate, and this is happening more and more frequently, and I think
yeah.
that as the vibrational frequency on this plane is being quickened,
mm-hmm.
that this type of experience is going to be happening a lot more with people. And then, of course, with some people for the first time, and they're going to, you know, they're saying, what the heck is going on here?
Right,
because
right.
there's suddenly tapping into who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what was, you know, in your book, and of course, you know, you're talking about this plane being a hologram, and of course, to my knowledge, you're not really an NDE, but what are some of the things that happened or that you discovered, as it were, that enabled you to find this truth?
Well, let's see. I have to think back. I remember specifically, I think, one day. It's one of those light bulb,
aha moment.
I remember suddenly I just went, none of this stuff is really what we call real. But then I had to define real. But for me, I'm going, wait a second. You know, it was really actually like that. It was a wait a second kind of thing. And I'm like, oh my God. And so for me, it was almost this laughter that went off in my head, because I'm thinking, geez, and I've been taking all this stuff so seriously. So that was kind of it for me. I was thinking, oh my God. Well, then if this is all holographic, then that means I can move pretty much anything. I can really do a whole lot more than I think I can do. And of course, then that goes into a whole other thing now in terms of, you know, the whole gravitational law, which, you know, I talk about in the book. But
no, that is so true, because again, as a near-death experience, is whenever we're out of body and not confined to the density of this plane. Exactly what you were saying is what we experience with just a thought. we can manifest something instantly. With just a thought, we can be with someone instantly.
Absolutely.
You see what I'm saying?
The
whole point of this is to really bring home to everyone that we can do this, every one
absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got to now, what we're living on is the program. So basically,
it's
rewiring of the brain. The brain has to be rewired. And because for a long time, however long we haven't been able to do this, we've just passed it on through the gene pool of our inability to transcend the gravitational laws. So we've submitted to the impossibility of all of these things. So it's now rewiring the brain because, you know, the brain is completely ready to create a new reality any given time. Anytime you want to, it'll expand or allow you to access more because it's fully functioning all the time. But just to be able to access more will allow us to be able to do all of these things because, you know, of course, the brain sends the message to the rest of the body, but the brain gets its instructions from you. So what kind of instructions?
Which is pure consciousness.
Exactly. So what kind of instructions have we been giving? Well, it's very clear what we've been giving. So
it's like an extremely cheap and limited software program that we need to just toss into the dustbin and give out mood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good description for it. But yes, it's a cheap and down program that we've been using with very limited capability. So we have to reinstall. And what I think is so amazing too is that traditional science, you know, can verify, even though they won't say specifically what we're saying, but I use traditional science and their discoveries to validate and verify a lot of what I'm saying. But the fact of the matter, Juliet, is that it is known that human beings, that the body, the brain automatically creates or changes the body as the environment changes. That's known. You know, no matter where you are, climatic changes over, I don't know, however many thousands of years, depending on what the area is and what is required, the body is evolving and changing and adding, whether it's a new part of the brain or the rib cage system that wasn't there before to protect the lungs, or there's just so many things that the brain does according to your need and according to the change in the environment. So you have this whole process working together, but you are actually the one in the backdrop regulating this vehicle. And I think we have to, if we can really begin to look at it that way and realize that yes, we are our bodies, but we are so much more expansive than that, and we're animating the body. So the greater aspect of who we are is actually what's animating the body. So we are making these decisions, and we are in connection with the environmental laws, and the body then, your vehicle then, shifts according to what is needed as we, you know, the human beings have evolved on the planet. That's traditional. That's just regular science right there. The other thing too is that just regular science has also confirmed the fact that you see with your brain and not with your eyes. To me, that's a huge one, because if your eyes are just acting as a lens and your brain is actually the one doing the scanning and transmitting these light frequencies back to, you know, to the cones and rods in your eyes, to the optic nerve, and back out actually through the cones and rods in your eyes, and creating this image for you, which is really a hologram. And then, of course, you know, that your five senses come into play then. I mean, that's a whole other story to it, but that is the basic premise of it. So that, to me alone, should let you realize, wait a second, so these are really holographic light images before me.
And what's interesting, too, is that on the other side, I saw that, and I'm going to take this just even a step further when you're talking about, which is so accurate on the physical plane, that it is the brain that does the seeing, not the eyes. But to take it even a step further, in a sort of way, it's none of that. It's our consciousness that's doing the seeing, because funnily enough, my physical eyes don't work very well on the physical plane. However, during my near-death states, and any time I've been out of body, I've had perfect 360-degree vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So clearly, you know, my dead body was, the eyes and the brain of the dead body weren't doing the seeing
or
the comprehending at all.
It's their consciousness. Absolutely. That's all that is really happening anyway. It's really just your consciousness, as I've always said, that's flip-flopping around in time, that's moving around in time. That's ultimately, in the end, what it is. And it is consciousness that's, you know, the backdrop of everything anyway, the manifestation of everything seen and unseen. It's supported by consciousness.
Absolutely, and there is a wonderful, wonderful physicist. Actually, he's a neuroscientist who's on Toward the Light, Dr. Mario Beauregard.
Mm-hmm.
He's the author of the book, The Spiritual Brain, here is a scientist speaking and validating the fact that the consciousness does survive death of the physical body, that we are a soul who have a brain, as it were.
Right.
And so I'm really excited about how there really is a marriage, there is a connection between what I'm going to say, true science,
mm-hmm.
and spirituality.
Right.
And there isn't a contradiction there. And Mario so rightly was pointing out the reductionist, how do you call it, materialist
mm-hmm.
scientists are the ones who only acknowledge the hologram as being real.
Right.
I wrote an interesting poem, which is in your entering the stuff in the chapter of your book too, chapter two, starting that. And the poem just simply goes like this. Where am I sitting here looking at the sky? Am I sitting in a dream looking at reality? Or am I sitting in reality looking at a dream? I can see this meadow about me, but what is this? I can feel this meadow about me, but what is this that I see? Could it be that a dream is reality, and reality a dream?
Mm. Wow.
And I wrote that way back in the early 60s.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, you were on top of it for a while. You've been on top of it for a while.
And it's so true, because I've always questioned the quote-unquote reality of this physical plane ever since I've been
right.
traversing this plane. I just thought, this is not it. Sorry.
Yeah. There's gotta be more. I exactly. That was my feeling. That, you know, and I think what always fascinated me, and still fascinates me to this day, but even though I do understand it, but there are people that really just don't question. And I understand why they can't question that deeply, because if they did, then they couldn't have the experiences that they're here to have.
Yes, exactly. It makes sense.
Yeah, they just, you know, you're questioning and you're doing according to what your, as I call it, your travel itinerary is, you know, laid out for whatever the travel plans that you took in this particular concept of time. You know, that's what you're having to play out. So you will only go so far. So that's why everybody will not wake up, or come into, I should say, the same level of awareness. As much as we do want to feel that way and to think that, I think we have to remember that it is an individual journey, even though we are all technically connected, we are all one, but at the same time, individualism, there's a level of individualism that is necessary, because that is how the one, then, the source, the one force itself, is having an opportunity to be all the potentials that it could be, is to have the illusion then of separatism. So then, you end up not being able to throw out the fact that people do go through this process of thinking that, not remembering their connection. They had to. We had to not remember, to the degree that we've forgotten in order to go ahead and be any and everything that, you know, the void, could potentially be molded into. So I think that's a very important part for us to remember, because when we remember that, it really minimizes, I think, the judgment of people. But just remember that they're doing whatever it is that they're needing to do. And we don't know what debts, we don't know what people are having to resolve. There's just so much we don't know about another person's journey.
And indeed, you're acknowledging the soul contract of, the sacred contract of that soul, because
Absolutely.
Some people are meant to be very simple and ignorant. And I'm even encountering a few hillbillies where I am right now, they just are so unaware of most things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I feel the utmost compassion, because they've got they're part of this beautiful design as well, and they've got something important to offer us.
Right.
And so this is an extremely valid point that you're making here, because and I always maintain this too, that everything is happening, for a reason, and we're not to, even if when we experience setbacks or disappointments, instead of getting all upset about it, to again ask the question, well, all right, what's the message here? Maybe it's just not the right time or what have you. And speaking of time, this is an interesting thing too, because you bring this up in the book. And of course, on the other side, we do not experience time and space as is experienced.
Right.
So why don't we get into that a little bit, and what got you, into writing that chapter? What sort of
discoveries about time?
You made? Yes, correct, yes.
And sometimes I have to say to myself, I need to sit and read the book. Sometimes I forgot which chapter. But I know I talk about time a lot, and I'm not sure if you're speaking, the area that you're speaking about is me defining the word time. And
yes, time, and you also address time travel.
Yes.
And your book is so rich. It's absolutely tremendous. It's very rich in content. Again, we're talking about the brilliant book, The Holographic Canvas by Sonia Barrett, who's a special guest on Toward the Light. And what is your website, Sonia, while we're at it? So I know you've got a few of them like I do.
Well, the one with the information on the book and all my information that's out there, that, obviously there's a lot of out there people that love the information. It's www.spiritinform.com. So that's spiritinform.com. And my radio show's website is Sovereign Mind, and it's www.sovereignmindradio.com. And I guess those two websites will lead you to my other one. I have a magazine also called New Corporate Body. And that's, as it says, New Corporate Body, www.newcorporatebody.com.
I look forward to asking you about that too, because that would be interesting to find out how, with the changes of the paradigms here with, how we regard ourselves and our life calling. But I was fascinated by your take on time and
right.
time travel, and because of the fact that, and I know it's very hard for, people coming from the egoic mind to fathom,
The concept of
timelessness, or everything happening all in the now,
all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's one of those things. I think you end up, once you get it, I say there's a base understanding. There's understanding where something clicks, and then everything else just sort of falls into place. It's that I get it again. But again, you have physicists who are really coming into the realization that past, present, and future does exist simultaneously, and are working on trying to see how that can be harnessed in terms of actual time travel. But the way I view that is I'm actually viewing that from the perspective of the fact that your consciousness is jumping around in time, as we were talking about before. It's really your consciousness that's flip-flopping in time. So wherever you, whatever you're focused on, where your focus is at that moment, for example, you and I in communication right here and now, in this particular moment of time, we are conscious of this moment of time. But if we were to, we could have shifted in a nanosecond, and we probably did not even notice that we weren't even talking for a nanosecond and we're someplace else. And I think that if we start paying attention, we have moments where we're standing in the kitchen or wherever, and then you suddenly feel like you're back from somewhere, even though you're busy in a whatever project you were working on.
Yes, yes.
But you scratch your head, but then we just kind of brush it off. But for me, I started to get flashes of seeing myself. I mean, I've seen myself while I'm conscious, too. And I think, wait a minute, did that just happen? Or was I on the couch? Or, you know, so I started to have things like that happen. Then I finally moved into a space of realizing that I was really all over the place. And that time was really not as we had thought. And then one day I was walking on the beach, and that the word time just sort of right there just popped up in front of me while I was walking. And that's when I saw where it says tie me, T-I, and then you put the hyphen in the middle, and it's tie me, which immediately it was restriction. It's like, whoa.
Yes.
So that's to restrict. And then it reversed itself, and then I realized, emit. So there is the restriction and release, which is, as physicists have come to realize, that's how energy operates, is both a wave and a particle. When
that's
it uses particle form, we get to see the physical world. I mean, everything solidifies in terms of what we view as solidifying, yet it's still actually very fluid. So everything is really quite fluid, even though at that moment you are the one that's stabilizing it as a particle, because you have acknowledged it into solidifying. So it's your acknowledgement of it that make it so pronounced and tangible to touch. So, you know, time travel doesn't necessarily, it's not really necessarily about a machine. It's the fact that it's really consciousness that is moving around in time, and there's no here nor there. There's only this moment with other pockets of time layered, you know, layers and layers and layers of different time spaces and different spaces all operating at different degrees of vibration.
And I've also used the analogy of, you know, that we're just toggling different dimensions simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And even different areas within the same dimension. But that's so true, and I think it's a very important point for people to understand this, because, for example, in my article, The Dying Process, from an experiences perspective, it's always hard to pronounce that, to get those words out. Experiences perspective, there we go. I'm talking about the fact that as one is getting ready to transition, one's consciousness is already leaving the confines of the physical plane.
Oh, yeah.
Physical awareness and what have you. So there's, the communion is already starting to happen on other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
That's
when it's like you're scoping out where you're going.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, the deathbed visions and communications that are going on and what have you. And that's a beautiful example of, being in different dimensions simultaneously and experiencing different facets of so-called time, which indeed doesn't exist. And another interesting thing about this, too, is that on the other side, when I was being reminded, well, this is actually when I was told that I had to come back to the physical plane, which was the most devastating sentence to me that I could receive. But at the same time, I was reminded, you know, don't forget that that is just an illusion. It's just a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
And you are to traverse through, but not to identify with it or hook into it or lock into mm-hmm. it or what mm-hmm. have you. So that was very reassuring to me. But as I was beholding the vision of, it sort of like now that I was being told I had to return to this alien world called the third dimension,
right.
then the focus started to come upon that, and then an image appeared. And indeed, it was very translucent. Mm-hmm. It didn't appear solid at all, and it was waves. I saw it as waves and particles. It looked like a hologram.
Mm.
So it was very interesting David Icke, in his book Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion, actually had a photograph or an illustration, perhaps I should say, of you see a city scene, but then it's all broken up into these waves and particles, because that's actually what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a hologram looks like. And also it was very drab in appearance compared to the other dimensions vibrating at higher frequencies.
Right.
There wasn't the color. It looked very grayish, this plane, compared to what we experienced on the other side. And, of course, the other side is, that's not just one dimension or one place either. That's
right.
A misconception that a lot of people still have got, but
this is a great playing field, though.
I'm sorry?
This is a great playing field, and I think that people have, they don't have to, but it would be great to, you know, for others to understand that this is just one playing field. This is just one area for you to have an experience. This is, of course, just the slowest level of time in terms of, you know, the how it's measured. You know, it's measured in hertz. And so that's a whole other show. But we look at all of that and we realize, yes, it is slow time down here. And that's why we have such difficulty understanding a lot of this and even in manifesting. Because, you know, your manifestations have to fall through time and into this plane. And so there's a whole lot tied into that whole concept, the whole understanding. But it is a great playing field, and I don't think that to want to escape is an illusion. I think that's the other thing, too, is that people have to understand that it really isn't about escaping. This is just one other area, just like there's endless, countless other areas, and they're all just a plane for an experience. So master, not necessarily using the word mastering, but coming to understand that and realize that no matter where you go, you're still part of a giant cosmic game of experiencing, of discovering, you know, who you are. You're chasing yourself is basically what's going on. We're chasing ourselves because we are creation, ultimately. In the end, that's who we are. We are the very thing we're looking for.
Well, it's like the analogy that has been brought up. In order for the light to discover that it is light, it's got to discover its opposite.
Absolutely.
In order for the light to know that it is the one, it's got to unearth its opposite. So
that's a great analogy. Yes, because that's very much so the same situation here. In order for us to know that, we have to come all the way down here as far as we can come to really get it.
And as NDEs too, we've spoke about the fact, you know, that and being a musician, of course, this is very easy for me to understand. But as you were saying, everything is vibrational frequency, and this plane is a lower, slow-moving, dense vibrational frequency, whereas when we, move beyond the physical plane. For example, when we transition, it's just a very simple process of an upsurge of energy and rising of the frequency. So we no longer need to don this earth suit, and that's all it is. It's just a suit.
Right.
It isn't who we are at all. It is just something that we use to traverse through this plane. Then once we let go of it, and that's what's very interesting to a lot of people, they discover, oh, goodness me, I'm still conscious. Well, yes, you right. are. You always have been. You always will be.
Right.
And that's the beauty of these experiences is this tremendous discovery that we're having now. And I've always maintained throughout this work that if the light were not going to prevail, and if we were not going to really tap into our divinity and bring that into manifestation once again, then we wouldn't have been brought back from these near-death episodes and all these right. other experiences that people have, and coming back to report this very consistent message too.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Everybody has basically come back with pretty much close to the same understanding, the same realization. So yeah, that I think that's so, it's so confirming, I think, for everyone, because you know, most of these people don't know each other. You don't know, you know, you've never met, and then you come with the same information.
Yes, and it's really fun to come upon that simultaneously, and I've seen that a lot with my wonderful, wonderful guest, such as yourself, and realizing, wow, we're so aligned here. This is really, really beautiful. And I like to think that this is going to be tremendously empowering for people all over the world, because we're just circulating en masse now.
Right.
Sharing this wonderful information and the myriad of ways that we can, uncover it, as it were, and then start sharing it. And I'm very pleased to connect with people who have been curious. That's a good word, because I've always thought of myself as a very curious sort too, always wanting to, you know, see how something works.
Right.
I love that. How does something work? Well, I'm an Aquarius. I've always been very curious. And then
I can definitely relate.
So looking at this and then again, from the vantage point of seeing on the other side with just a thought and intent, and when we can tap into how powerful we are as beings, what we can create is tremendous. So now I think a big part of this puzzle is how to, you know, move beyond the fear that is keeping us locked in a place of ignorance and servitude.
Right.
This is something that we're needing to move beyond now.
Absolutely.
Now, your book came out last year, is that correct?
No, actually this year.
This year it came out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It probably, I don't know which copy you have anyway. It's one of those long stories behind it, but it was actually January.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
January.
The holographic canvas, the fusing of mind and matter. Exploring reality in a space called mind. I really, really love that. It's so beautiful, and I definitely recommend this book to everyone. I'm so enjoying reading it, and it's had me feeling a lot more confidence and a lot more joy, especially in light of all the challenges we're dealing with on this plane. And at the same time, that's all a part of the divine process as well. I think it's really going to push us to become more self-aware and in the most positive sense of the word. I'm not talking about the ego, of course. I'm talking about our true selfhood. Are there any special events coming up, Sonia, that you would like to share with our listeners this evening?
Well, let's see. I'm going to be, well, you have to be in the Los Angeles area, Southern California anyway. On Thursday, December 4th, I'm going to be doing, it's a two-hour, actually a free lecture / discussion called Government of the Matrix, and that's going to be in Culver City. And you can, of course, get on my website to get that information. I'm going to be doing, what I call a memory lecture, which I've been doing those. I did a couple in the Bay Area just a couple of weeks ago. And that's going to be January 18th, 2009. And memory lecture is simply to assist one in remembering. It's a full-day lecture from 9 to 4. That's also going to be in the Los Angeles area. And to get more information, you can go to my website, www.spiritinform.com, click on events, or you can call 949-249-3825 to get more information. And also to obtain the book, if you want a signed copy, you can also order it from the website, or you can go to Amazon. There's other online bookstores, but we'll just say Amazon right now, and my website as well.
But to Amazon, they won't get an autographed copy.
No,
that would just be ordering for your website. So let's encourage that one.
Yes.
That's tremendous. Now tell us a bit about your, because I saw this in the book too, which interests me, the Government of the Matrix.
Government of the Matrix. Well, I just sort of put together a paper, a 13-page paper, sort of giving information on the little bit more of the structure of our governmental system, especially in relationship to what's going on right now, this whole process, the election, all of that. And it's explaining what that means, what government means, how it relates to you, the matrix, you know, exactly what is the matrix and how do your contracts in terms of being here on the planet in this matrix, how that works with the contracts here, which are the contracts of law. And those contracts of law are actually what helps you to fulfill being interwoven into the matrix then, per se, on that level. So this is what this lecture is about. Yes, if you go on the website, it's pretty long. It, you know, it goes into some of the organizations involved in your process, and I talk about change because change was the big thing for the election for everybody that was running. That's what they were talking about, was change. And I saw something a little bit more with the word change.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah.
You can be sure. And I was calling it, rightfully so, as a lot of people have been calling it a C-lection rather than election.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all of them.
Absolutely.
It's all of them. But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with all of this, this is another opportunity for us to own our divinity and to look within for answers and not keep thinking that somebody out there is going to save us, is going to help us, is going to protect us, yada, 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 yada. You know,
well, it's the savior program, I call it, and I think the savior program runs through. This is no different. We're just seeing it with the political arena, but human beings are programmed with that concept, which is, you know, why we like superheroes. And we're always looking for someone to save us. That's what religion does, you know.
Exactly.
Provides, you know, a savior, whether it be the minister. There's always someone outside. There's always somebody greater than you can be. That's the programming. So you can't do it for yourself, so you've got to have a leader. So that, you know, so that's where I think that stems from. So it's just showing up more so in this whole election process. And not only that, people are ripe for it too because of 8 years of what they've dealt with. So it would be very easy to insert anything at this time because people are ready for anything but what they just dealt with.
Oh, and, I know. My daughter and I were talking about it. I even said to her, oh, what perfect packaging was this?
Great scriptwriters.
I tell you, what a beautiful, good-looking actor we've got here, you know,
oh,
in America's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What better way to do what you need to do than to present that kind of, you know, packaging, which is what, you know, what I saw when I looked at it. I mean, I saw quite a bit with it. So, people have to understand, at the same time, it's an amazing opportunity to go either way. There is change.
Oh,
you know,
big time.
That change means a couple of different things. You know, it could be, you know, what we've looked at as the New World Order, or there is the change where you can start owning yourself and digging more into you on a spiritual level and not be so focused on the external approach, because external approach will not ever save anyone. You have to, it has to be where you're going within and you're discovering more of who you are and your connection. That's the only thing that's going to really direct you. So you're being forced to take ownership or to continue to be owned. This is really the bottom line of it.
That's exactly it. That is so exactly it. And the interesting thing too about the, you know, the messages that in the ears bring back is, you know, how completely connected to source and to one another and to all life we are at all times, and we are not small, insignificant little beings. And it's rather auspicious, all of these dialogues simultaneously coming up, because I've been also acknowledging the fact that people need heroes, they need God-men, you know, to create a God in human form. All of these, what to me are myths.
Yeah.
You know, because just like you're pointing out, they need some external sort of hero or savior. And yet, when we discover our own direct link to the light source and that we, in fact, are light also, then there's no need for that kind of thing.
Well, and that's the reason for the deterrent, though, so that you don't discover.
Yes.
Because I think we have to realize if the fear is that should that many people discover, the game would be over as it, we've known the game. And so there's a whole lot more attached to this whole process, you know, from on the planet and outside of the planet. So this is a lot bigger than people realize. And it has everything to do with you as a being arriving here on spaceship Earth. And so we have to really begin to look a lot further than what we will ever see in the news or written anywhere, because if you go inside yourself, you're going to really get the true answers as to what the situation is. There's a lot of forces at work in the sense of, shadow, if you want to call them shadow governments or the shadow elite groups that run a lot of or run the show then. And what you see, it's the problem is not with the people that you see. It's the people that you don't know about, the people that you don't
see. Yes, exactly.
So once again, here we are, it's the world of the invisible that always has the power. So it's not what you see with your eyes, it's what you don't see. And we have to really come into that and start to realize that and not limit ourselves in this manner. Because that's how they, you know, you end up getting disillusioned. Lots going on, lots going on.
That's why I keep encouraging people to switch off the television. I'm so sorry that, you know, I've been in America, I've seen more televisions than ever anywhere in my life.
Yeah.
And they've become a shrine in people's homes. I've never owned a television in my life, and I don't plan to anytime soon. Because it's not accurate information, and in fact, I would encourage people to switch on their intuition instead and listen to the dreams.
Well, they're going to switch that on. And if you do have a television, I think you have to, if you, there is awareness and you understand what it is that you are doing. If you're watching what you're watching from the perspective of recognizing that it's a game and you're eating popcorn and you're wanting to be an observer and you're seeing what's going on, I don't watch the news, you know, either. But, you know, you get enough. You get on the internet. There's just enough out there where you don't have to sit and watch the news to really know what the new package is that's being presented to, people who are asleep. But I think if you have a television and you decide, you know, that you are going to be, to view this from a more aware space, then that's a different story, because now you're observing. You're not emotionally involving yourself and buying into the package. Lots of, what do you call it again? Gosh, I can't think of the word. Because the brain is picking up a lot of this information. I forget. I can't think of the word right now.
yeah.
as to how this is, you know, this you're being programmed with all of this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and they know what triggers to hit. Also, you know, and that's why I really like to do a lot of meditation, but not sitting in the lotus position either. I'll just go walk along the water.
Oh, yeah.
And commune with nature.
Right. You can do it anywhere. Absolutely. Absolutely. That, and that's the other thing, you know, Juliet, is us moving away from any set particular way that we've been told that we have to do something, but finding our own way. And we don't have to do any of this any particular one way, in the sense of, like you just mentioned, meditation, which is a really good thing that you just said. You can be in a constant state of meditation and functioning all the time, which is technically what probably should happen, because it allows you to be more connected, and it's like your intuition is tuned up several notches. So you're going to get directed and guided as to what's going on, where to go, you know, where not to be at all times. So therefore, that's going to take away your fear of, you know, what's going on, what's the government doing to me. That's the game. That's the distraction right there, is when you are locked into that. But if you can observe what's going on but stand in your own power, you're going to realize you're a whole lot greater than this game, you know, can ever be at this time.
That is such a wonderful point, Sonia. And thank you so much for saying that, too, because when we can remember that we are never alone, that we are going to receive the guidance that we need, just in the nick of time, not necessarily when we or our egos would like it,
absolutely,
but just at the nick of time, we are going to get that guidance and the input that we need. And that's why it's so important that we're doing this work, to help people trust in their own divinity and to believe in that, and to know that they are always connected with Source and can get any information that is important and necessary for them. Again, not seeking some hero out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the hero is actually within. The hero is our heart. And I like the interpretation of fear, too, because when people can remember that, then it will help them to extract themselves from it. And that is false evidence appearing real.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy, and is there a lot of that going on right
now?
Into the hologram.
There's a lot of that going on. And I think, again, people are so desperate for change. And it doesn't matter who it is. You to surrender that much trust into anyone that they're going to fix and save everything for you. Got it. Yeah, definitely. This is going to be a major lesson, and we've seen it time and time again. And you know, it's like there's much I could say about this, but we're all going to receive and interact with an experience according to where we are in our understanding. That's why knowledge is key. Knowledge is so powerful, because that's going to allow you to know what you need to do.
And that is so spot on, Madhya, because that's what I've been sharing with people, that exactly that is what is also going to affect and influence their near-death episodes, where they go, what they experience, what they perceive, what they understand, based on their current frame of mind and mindset, and how much they're in love or how much they're in fear and what have you. So it is important, with something so basic, to be mindful of our mind, of our thoughts. And if nothing else, we need to focus on just being in a place of love at all times, because that's what's going to keep the disinformation from being able to really penetrate us, because something is going to come along and say, no, that's not right. Here's the truth. When we are in a place of love, that you can be guaranteed that that's exactly what's going to happen. And I'm so appreciative of this tremendous resource in your wonderful, wonderful book. And thank you in spirit. Thank you for following your calling by writing and sharing this wonderful book. Now, do you workshops on a regular basis?
I schedule them every, let's see, probably every four or five months, but I don't have the schedule for next year, but I am going to be speaking in New York. I'm going to be in New York and Atlanta. These are full-day lectures, and I don't have it all in front of me, but it all will be listed on the site. They just have to click on events, and they will see it. But I'm, you know, being invited by other other people and organizations to come and speak in different places, Chicago as well. And I also have video excerpts on YouTube. If anybody wants to look at that, there's several video excerpts on there. And from that perspective, I call them their workshops, I guess lectures. I started referring to them as memory lectures, as I said, because I wanted to shift that whole concept and for people to realize that what I'm doing is I'm just reminding you of what you already know. I'm helping to trigger your memory on some things, and in the process, you're helping me as well. Because as I share what I share, it also allows me to expand even more. Because sometimes while I'm speaking, there's new information, as you know how that works, coming out of my mouth as well. And so I'm also learning some things at that moment. But I do it from a perspective of people coming into their own. I fill out the guru thing, and I really talk about that, giving away one's power to any individual. I don't care how much information they have.
Excellent. Yes, I've never followed gurus myself,
Me neither. And then the thing for the guru too, it affects both.
Oh, sure it does.
It totally does. It affects both, because if you allow yourself to be glued, that's going to affect it. You're putting limitations, on yourself as well, on your own progress, and also on the individual. So both parties are being affected in that sense of limitation.
And I've got to acknowledge our friend David Icke, because he just in this week's newsletter. Actually, in last week, too, he's been in India, and I think he just got back home better. Mm. But he's talking about this very thing he's addressing, why do you think you need to follow a guru, and even in a specific form, you've got to wear such an outfit and shave your head and wear a certain color. And blimey, no. Again, we've got to go within and not seek some kind of external hero or man god or...
Absolutely.
What have you. And I just thought this is really, really timely right now, because does seem to be, there's a lot of emphasis on the hero, isn't there? And on the...
The heroes. We love that. And, Hollywood gives it to us. You can't get on the internet without seeing a celebrity. A celebrity is the same thing. They're worshipped. So
yes.
We've got this worshipping issue. And again... without being able to go into all of that, the worshiping concept and the savior concept, they come together. They're a part of each other. And which is the reason why we feel that we need to worship something. And the whole idea for me of the fact that I have to worship anything makes me question it, because why would a god then, as people, Christianity especially, recognizes God. If you are God and you are all-powerful, why would you need to be worshipped?
Exactly.
It just didn't make any sense to me.
That's a very needy God, isn't it?
And absolutely. It just didn't really make any sense to me. So I say you might want to stop and you might want to question, who are you talking about? What do you have any idea, or is this just simply based on what your minister or your leader has given to you, which is just packaged information, once again, that's been handed down. Have you investigated any of this? Or, you know, or are you just swallowing this package, which most people do, because generation after generation, well, my grandparents, this is, you know, they were Catholics, or they were Christians, or they were whatever. My grand, you know, so a whole generation after generation of the same thing, without questioning. How bizarre is that? But, you know.
I wrote about that, too, in my blog. It's in the blog, Into Light, letter N, number 2, Light, L-I-G-H-T, on the blogger. And what's interesting, the article that I wrote is called Religion, the Ultimate Fear Propaganda. And what's interesting about that is it was, what inspired it was a sweet little lady came up to my door and handed me a piece of literature. Now, she wasn't trying to preach at me, so I was quite taken by her very unassuming demeanor. And I knew intuitively straight away what it was, and I went to throw it in the rubbish, and then something said, no, have a look at it. And so I put it down in the office. And funnily enough, it was a Jehovah Witness propaganda, and the two things it was addressing is what happens when we die. And I thought, ooh, well, I'm an NDE, okay, I can answer that question. And then the other question was, is there any hope for the dead? And what was really odd is that their propaganda was saying that the dead know and feel and experience nothing. And I thought, what? And even after all this time with all these NDEs circulating and iterating exactly the opposite of that, there are still people going around professing that and believing it.
Oh, yes.
And the fear connected with that is monumental.
Absolutely. Well, that's how control gets initiated, though.
Exactly. And it's all about control. It's all about mind control. It's all about fear keeping us locked in servitude. Because when we're so divorced from our own divinity, especially with, you know, these, any sort of fundamentalist form of religious practice, we're completely divorced from our self-awareness and our own divinity. And that's what's going to keep us slaves. And
absolutely.
Me, you know, all my life I've had the audacity to question everything, to have my own thoughts. Well, bloody hell, lock her up, man. She has her own thoughts.
it's so crazy, isn't it, though?
It really is.
You can't do that. Yeah, well, you know, I've got to be who I am, and that's something I came to a while ago. And you have to make up your mind, you know, at what cost. You want to be who you are. You want to honor what you say you know. Otherwise, all you're doing is believing something.
It's
all about knowing. Yeah. Do you really know this? Okay. Well, then if you know it, then you have to go ahead and embrace it at all times.
And emanate that.
Absolutely. And I don't go around imposing, you know, any of my what I know on anybody. As a matter of fact, I can be in any situation, and nobody ever would find out what I know, because I feel that I allow situations to open up. If somebody starts talking to me and somehow the conversation opens that way, then I know that that's the way it needs to go. And we will have this beautiful exchange, and you're able to meet that person where they are and operate from that perspective. But, you know, not to debate anybody. That's something I don't do, because then that means I'm trying to convince myself.
Yes, exactly. Good point, Madeira.
Yeah, so it's like, if you're interested in what I have to say and we can have an exchange, then I'm open to it. Otherwise, you're welcome to keep knowing and believing whatever it is that you know and believe.
This is so interesting. It reminds me of an email I received several days ago, and the subject line said, "Toward the real light." And I thought, all right, what is this? You know, because my organization and the radio show are Toward the Light. And there's a fundamentalist Christian telling me that the only real light is Jesus, yada, yada, yada. And he was just Bible thumping in these emails.
Yeah.
You know, I lovingly countered him, and I said, well, my experience has shown me otherwise. Then he sent me an email after a couple of exchanges saying, I feel sorry for you. And I thought, no, mate, you feel sorry for yourself because you weren't able to convert me because you yourself are not at peace with your own so-called belief system. And then I was asking him, what is the source of your information? Something you just read in a book? Or did you have experience? And there's the defining difference right there. It's quite one thing to hypothesize something, quite another to have experienced it and to own it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I get you. I know I received a comment on my YouTube because I have quite a few up there, and a gentleman wrote, because I have a lot of, there's a lot of males that were responding in just a positive manner because they said that there weren't that, you know, not a lot of women out there talking about it from the perspective of science or in the manner in which I wasn't,
yes.
And they were very happy. But this one gentleman decided to put a comment on there to tell the men if they want to keep following me and listen to me, I'm Eve all over again, and they're going to go to hell. And then he went to another video that I had, and he put the same comment. He goes, there she goes again. Eve is at it again.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. I thought, wow, I'm powerful. I had no idea. I had this kind of... I have kind of power. I'm going to have you eat the apple again, huh?
That's
great. I really believe that. Okay.
And it's so interesting how seemingly intelligent people will literally buy these stories. You know, these fairy tales, these symbols.
Yeah, that's what they are, symbols. I mean, it's all symbolism, just symbols. They don't see, they don't read behind it. I mean, it's just like the Bible. I mean, the Bible, I've gone through it. I remember in the very beginning, yes, I went through it because I wanted to see, you know, what everybody was talking about. And I put it down, and then I went back to it. And then I saw lots of things in there that made sense. But you have to be able to read between the lines, and you have to step away from reading just the words.
Exactly.
It's so encoded. It's just, it's all mixed up. It's a big game book, like a big video game book is what I call it. And it mixed everything up, and now you have to, you know, you don't have to, but if you're going to read it, I suggest you really decipher it. You really go beyond, you know, the words. And what, there was one verse there, one scripture, and of course I haven't read my Bible in a long time, but there was one that always stuck with me, and it was, a question that Nicodemus, I guess, had asked Jesus, and Jesus said, if I have told you of earthly things and ye believe not, how can I tell you of heavenly things? How can I tell you which way the wind bloweth? And see, a lot of people would just read that for what it says, and when I read it, I thought, no, what he's saying is, if I tell you of the simple, just basic things of your world, and you don't get it, you're not really trying to get it, how am I going to tell you, well, which way the wind blows would be the sciences? How are you going to understand that, the greater science of creation? That's what I saw in that script, in those few lines.
Yes, very good.
So it's written it's written in that manner, and that's what you have to do to be able to see it. And there were so many scriptures that I was able to go, and I looked and I go, wow, that's what they were saying right here. We're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna tell you. And I've seen that blatantly. Another scripture that I had seen, I think it was in Hebrew, and it mentioned Melchizedek and said that, what is it, having neither beginning of days or end of life, and went on to say, of whom we have many things to save, but hard to, or couldn't be uttered, seeing that you're hard of hearing. And again, whether, I'm not debating whether the story is true or not, I'm looking at what is being said, and right there what was being said again was the fact that this person supposedly has neither beginning of days or end of life. So he is just eternal, according to what they're saying.
Exactly.
But we have a lot of stuff that we could really tell you and explain to you about this that would go way too deep, but we can't really tell you. We're not going to write it in this book. We're not going to tell you about it because you're not going to be able to get it. So we're just going to leave all that stuff out, and we're just going to put in just little basic stories that we think, you know, that we can work with to keep you, you know, where you are. So we can keep you controlled and keep you dumbed down. But if should you figure it out, then okay.
That's a really good point too, and I think, you know, I think about the fact that so many people are suddenly awakening en masse, that so many of us have had these experiences of the other side that we can actually talk about it. We're the messengers of eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, coming from a place of experience. And it's interesting how still so many people are blockheads about it.
Oh, They will fight you on it. Oh, yeah. You can almost get into a fist fight. Somebody could actually get that upset. And, you know, and the thing is this, Juliet, is if you find yourself getting that upset because someone doesn't agree with you, then you really need to rethink what it is that you're talking about. Because if you're upset because you need that person to validate what you say that you believe, you really need to step back and think about it.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe, excuse me, allow yourself to have an experience or just to look into other things altogether, because it's so true that, you know, when one really is in a place of knowing, there is a profound peace that comes with that. And again, being on the other side and being with the light, and just being with it and in it, there's just, And I can't put this into words at all, but there's absolutely no sense of separateness, no sense of fear or worry or need. But with this knowing, you are so at peace and so still, and you feel in that moment that nothing can shake you.
Right.
Nothing can destroy you because you are in that place of oneness.
Right.
And so when that happens, you don't need anyone to agree with you.
Absolutely.
Because you're right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely. Because that's where the debate comes from. Because it's human beings need each other to validate what they're doing. And that's not just with religion. That's with anything. I mean, if you're not doing the same thing that most people are doing, I mean, for example, I mean, I always give the example of food, you know, if somebody says they're vegan or somebody says they're, you know, vegetarian or whatever the case may be, and you have somebody that's a meat eater, either one of those parties can really either look down on the other person because they're a meat eater, or the meat eater can look down on the, you know, the other person as being ridiculous because they're doing that. And then there could be, now there's static because you're not doing the same thing I'm doing, and it almost disqualifies, you know, what I'm doing. So I need you to be doing what I'm doing.
Good point, yes. It's interesting. That happened to me the other day because I am a vegetarian and I've been for the better part of my life, and someone said, excuse me, when we went out, do you mind if I eat meat? And I said, oh, I don't mind in the least. I said, I'm vegetarian because that's what's right for me, but you need to do what's right for you because we've all got a different body chemistry anyway.
Right, right.
And I've never had issues about, you know, people doing whatever they need to do that's best for them. And that's a very good point too, because it does go straight across the board for all of our experiences in life, and we're really all right with who we are in our own process and just allowing things to open and evolve in their own sweet way, then it doesn't matter how other people are, because I admit I don't resonate with those who are violent, and I'm going to try to avoid them at all costs.
Right,
but still, having said that, I feel profound compassion for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were talking about, you know, even addressing your ex-husband earlier, and then other people who've had, for example, I was talking to my neighbor, you know, his roommate is an alcoholic, and actually mm-hmm. he is dying as we speak because of his alcoholism, and his liver is completely shut down now.
Right.
All I could feel for him was compassion, but also I've made this point when I'm counseling people and what have mm-hmm. you. People are alcoholics or on drugs for a reason, and it's not right to point the finger at them. Oh, you're on drugs, bugger you, you know. There's a reason, there's something that caused that individual to resort to that, and it's really important that we regard them with compassion and look at ways to rehabilitate these individuals mm-hmm. in a loving and positive way. Mm-hmm. So, excuse me once again. I think this is a really important point, because when we know, again, about our own divinity and that others don't have to think or look or behave the way that we do, we are all expressions of light source, and in our very unique and special ways. And it's all happening for a reason and right on course. And that was something I learned during all of my near-death episodes, is that everything is evolving exactly the way it should.
Oh, yeah.
That's so even now with all this tension, I think, oh, well, you know, this is part of the plan.
It's part of the plan. That's the thing about it. It's part of the plan. And that's what I looked at, is the fact that this individual represents an amazing point in time now. And he and you have the option of door number one or door number two. Which door will you choose? So this individual represents a propulsion for people to either step up to the plate again in ownership of themselves, or they can continue down the road of hypnosis, because if they continue down that path, oh, there's a package that's being put together for them.
Is there ever?
There is a package, and it's so subtle. That's the thing. All of what's coming, people won't realize what hit them. It's like they're going to be blindsided. You know, it's going to be a while before you see, because everything that's being presented is going to it's going to sound as if this is beneficial. It's a great idea. In the meantime, there are other things that are being split into the package. And so that, you know, that's what I see down the road. That's what I see coming up.
I'm seeing it too, and I've been seeing it for so many, many years. And mm-hmm. I knew back in the 60s when I read 1984, I said, this isn't a novel, this is a true story.
Absolutely.
And I didn't sleep for weeks, and I knew that I was going to be a part of some, perhaps, renaissance, for lack of a better word, to help awaken people.
Absolutely. You know, and when we talked about time travel mm-hmm. earlier, and again, you know, to go into the scope of any of this, there isn't enough to use, excuse me, for lack of a better term, time in terms of time as we function in it to talk about it. But we don't realize, because we don't realize how all of this works, the whole concept of time travel, the whole concept as to how time is always in motion, that everything is fluid and nothing is in this static position always. It's always moving. So how do we know, and I talk about this, I know, in articles, how do we know that we really are not back in time? How do you know you're not back in a past, in a past time here, and there is really obviously a future potential where, you know, you have the choice of whatever it is was going on in terms of either an evolution or a devolution in terms of the political structure.
Absolutely.
How do you know you know, how do you know you're not back in time? You have an opportunity to become aware, step up, and go back through a more evolved concept of time, as opposed to remaining in the past and returning again and again to a past concept of time. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense to me, and I appreciated reading. I don't know if you read Oversoul 7 by Jane Roberts, who channeled Seth.
No, I know of it. I know of it, though.
It's brilliant, and it actually talks about, it addresses a soul experiencing different lifetimes simultaneously.
Yeah.
Which I know it's hard for people to get their arms around that, but that's actually what's going on.
That's really what's going on. So there really isn't past life the way people think.
Right.
I talk about it in the book. It really isn't. You're really living. It's all happening right here now. So to wrap your head, your mind around it. But, you know, I just want to say to the audience, you know, take it from me. It's not as if, I didn't study with anybody. I didn't read all of this information. It was just simply a desire. I had a desire to know, to understand, and I was very persistent with it, and just was able to go ahead and access the information, with, you know, just knowing that I could, because it's in everything. It is everything. Everything is information. That's all everything is. It's just all data. So, you know, with that realization, I knew that I could. So this is anybody. It's everybody's birthright to be able to do that.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
It's everyone's birthright. There's nobody more special than the other. But you have to be willing to put the time in, the work in to it. It's up to you. You don't have to do it. And nobody dies, as I always say, anyway. There is no schedule. You don't have to do anything at any given time. You do it whenever you... good and well, you know, you feel good and well and you want to do it at that particular time. But I think people like Juliet, myself, and others, whatever it is we share and we give, we provide, it's for those people who are drawn to that, it's because they probably are ready for that. And so they're drawn to that. So we're not, at least I know, I don't think Juliet is either, but we're not out there trying to get anybody to do anything. We're saying what we're saying, doing what we're doing, and whoever is drawn to it, then we welcome that, because we're all on an equal plane here.
And I think a really good point, too, is that everyone has got to be true to soul, to thine own self.
Self be true.
Absolutely. Because that is critical right now. And in fact, here's another good example. And, of course, I get emotionally charged about this because I'm a survivor of colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through, unfortunately, the chemo and radiation, which was worse than the disease itself.
Right.
And so I was talking to somebody who had just got back from a round of chemo, and I wanted to cry just speaking with her about that. And I said, oh, goodness me, I went to that, and you needn't do this. But she was becoming, you know, there's such a tremendous awakening going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
She sounded very strong and positive, and I just felt, you know, this is really interesting that these people are being led to me and I can share with them some ideas. And I said, well, this, you know, this worked for me. You don't have to succumb to this or being, you know, reduced to this and having all of these poisons and toxins pound into you and that sort of thing and feeling disempowered. But she was making the point of something where I feel like I've got to do this my kids because they're pressuring her. And I said, no, lovey, you need to do what's right for you, not for your kids or a spouse or anybody else. You really need to be true to yourself.
Absolutely. That's what it boils down to.
I just can't stress that enough, because, you know, a lot of people will make decisions to do something even to themselves, it's harming them because of pressure from somebody else.
Oh, yeah. That's most people, though. I think that's part of the a big part of the programming. I think most human beings live their lives based on someone else. And if it's not necessarily a particular individual, we have to look at these, you know, social codes that I talk about. So
exactly.
Most people's lives are based on social programming, these social codes of expectations, a process, a concept, or an idea that defines us as being successful or just defines us overall. So I think people spend their lives trying to meet these codes of expectations, which then means that you are living someone else's idea and ideal in terms of what and how your life should unfold. So I think that's something that people have to look at and see, how organic, you know, are my thoughts? Is my life? Am I doing whatever it is I'm doing now because I want to? What's attached to it? So I find that to be, for me, it was very freeing. It was extremely freeing. It was a little devastating at first, but then it was very freeing because then, you know, you're totally responsible then for you. And it's you scratching your head. You're like, okay, well, what do I do now? Now that I'm completely owning myself, what happens next?
And it's so important, and it's really significant when you can clearly see that someone is being true to soul, being true to oneself, and having one's own thoughts. And I've even said to people, it's very important that we question all the answers, that we indeed allow ourselves to have our own thoughts. And mm-hmm. A lot of times somebody would say something to me and I'd say, now let's look at this. Where did that thought come from? Is that your own thought? Mm-hmm. Or is that somebody else's thought?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And some people will just say, oh, they'll have this sort of knee-jerk reaction, say, oh, no, that was my own thought. Then I said, no, it wasn't. You may think it's your own thought, but you're only parroting what I've heard a squillion other people say. And it's not your own original thought at all, so we really need to go in and look at our thoughts and say, all right, where did this really come from? What's the source of this really?
It's the subtlety of all of it, though. The imposition is so subtle, and I think as human beings, we've gotten so used to operating like that or being directed that, we easily go ahead and absorb whatever the new program is, whatever the direction is. And here we go again with the political situation again. They've got people chanting, you know, for these rulers to, but it's so amazing how good they are at this though. Because they get the general populace to demand something that they actually want to do, like a child, and something that they want to do, but they get you to agree to it, you know. So I look at how interesting that process is. They put you in a situation where eventually you start demanding, and they go, okay, well, finally we're going to, you know, be able to implement our plan.
Exactly.
Now that we got them begging,
and then
they go ahead and slide it right in, and it's like, here you go, you asked for it.
And that's what we've got to be so careful of, isn't it? And you know, I'm very grateful that I am an old duck. I don't mind admitting it myself firsthand, because I've always had the audacity to have my own thoughts. And so I've never been easily swayed. I've just had a tendency to question a lot more than most people do. And there's so many, many things that are glaringly obvious to me that I'm not to other people. I'm not trying to say I'm more intelligent than somebody else, but maybe in just some ways I've just been more aware, self-aware, what have you. And I think it's really critical that people, and I know it's work, but once we take responsibility, when we know the truth, and this is unbiblical, statement that I really do resonate with. When you know the truth shall set you free, and that does take responsibility, and it means having your own thoughts.
Absolutely.
But it's so liberating and freeing, because then all of a sudden what happens is that you're just getting this free flow of guidance.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have to have all this effort being put forth anymore, because you are getting divine guidance because you are aligned with soul.
Oh, yeah.
You're just not getting it from the shadow people anymore telling
Absolutely.
You what to do.
But I think mm-hmm. it's fear of the unknown and putting they put a fence around just how deeply one will dig or question. But I think people like you who step up and go ahead and question everything, there isn't a fear there in terms of what you will find out. You would rather know. And I think that that's the difference where some people, they say, well, what can I do about it anyway? I've heard people say that, well, what am I going to do about it anyway? And so that's the cop-out. So it's easier to not know. You know, it's like this old show they used to have, let's make a deal or, you pick one of these. Pick one of these packages, pick one of these doors and, just go with it. So, yeah, so I think that's what it is. It's a big fear of what's behind, what's behind the curtain.
Well, that's created the perfect stigma around death because, again, the source of that is fear of the unknown.
Right.
And then now that we're coming around and saying, well, guess what? You don't actually die at all. You don't lose your consciousness. You don't lose yourself. You don't lose anything except a body.
Except your vehicle.
Exactly. And so this in itself, just knowing that creates a tremendous amount of power.
Oh, absolutely. Because then the fear of that actually is a huge part of how law here has controlled and is regulated. We have, I always go into the fact that we have the seatbelt laws and we have this law and protect your life and this and that. I mean, so that in itself builds a tremendous amount of fear with people running around trying to protect themselves from, and yet you get one person who, they fall from, 200 feet, to the ground, and they're fine, and somebody else will be absolutely padded and everything, and some bizarre thing happens, and they'll fall, and then they're gone. So I think we have to, more than anything else, also look at the fact that there are reasons, there are things about our journey that is associated with people's departure from the planet when they leave the game as it is, their physical body no longer exists in terms of timing, in terms of whatever their fulfillment is. That has to be heavily tied into it because creation and the universe doesn't play favorites. So
no, indeed.
There's no reason why you're being saved and the other person is being taken. So it has to have something to do with the individual and the individual's journey, the individual soul's journey. It's not preferential.
Exactly, and that's a wonderful point. I really want to thank you for making that point, too, because it's so, so true. It's really wonderful. Madhu, believe it or not, we are out of time. We've had such a tremendous dialogue for almost 2 hours here on Told the Light.
It's been fun.
It's wonderful. It's
yes.
Absolutely wonderful. We've been talking with Sonia Barrett, the author of the tremendous book, The Holographic Canvas, and I would certainly vote that as a must read. So I want to encourage you to check that out. And the website is, what is the website again?
It's www.spiritinform.com.
Okay. Spiritinform.com. And certainly please go visit that website. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week on another transmission of Towards of Light. Thank you again, Sonia, for joining us, and we will speak to you next week. Blessings and light to all.